Hello and welcome to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We will, as always, start with a story.
Burnout, a drama in three acts. Act one. I have barely time to breathe, we say. Days fly by. Is it Thursday already? We get angry at our boss, angry at our colleagues, angry at our customers, angry at ourselves. We want to save the world, and we wanted to do it better than anyone. The world keeps applauding us. People seem to enjoy the race. Time slips through our fingers. It is never enough. One more coffee, one more sleepless night. There is no time to breathe. Until one day, at the worst possible time, there is no air, and the fire goes out. Act two. The body is exhausted. The mind is paralyzed. The days drag on. We just want tomorrow to come, because maybe tomorrow we will feel better. The world moves on around us, and it's too fast. Where is the strength that was here? How did this happen to me? Stop asking difficult questions, we say when someone says, "Are you okay?" Everything is exhausting. Days and nights are a blur. Endless medical appointments, endless exams, endless prescriptions. It seems that we'll never be able to live a normal life again. We try to go back to normal for way too long. Until one day, we realize that normal is invented. That our normal can be invented by us. It can be anything we want. And the flame slowly reignites. Act three, the sun shines through our bedroom window again. We spent months, perhaps years, in the dark. At the same time, it feels like it's been so fast. The days have a spark of joy again. We are again able to make a promise and keep that promise. We understand our limits. We come to grips with our traumas. We allow ourselves to pursue our desires. We learn to walk again, to relate with others, to work. We are still jolted by our relapses, but we learn to live with them. Our essence is now visible, crystal clear. Life keeps shaking us from our center, throwing us back and forth, but we know now the way back. Things keep getting out of control, but now we laugh about it all. Now our fire can heat without hurting, and we learn day after day that we can shine without burning out.
Three acts, three brilliant acts. Thank you so much, Carol. Before we start, a little note to anybody who is listening for the first time or anybody who has forgotten. My name is Stefano. I run Puck Creations and I am the regular host of this podcast. If the title Storytelling with Puck hasn't given it away, this podcast is all about stories. One, two, three acts, four acts if you like. But we'll share stories, chat about stories, and see how stories fit in with the business world too. Of course, we couldn't do any of that without our wonderful guests. So let's start by properly introducing Carol Miltersteiner. Carol, can you maybe give us act one of Carol Miltersteiner and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you, Stefano. I am a writer who has recently accepted and come to terms with the fact that I am a writer. I have been running away from that for most of my life. I was born in Brazil, in the south of Brazil, a place that is not as tropical as one would think about when they think about Brazil. And I have worked for over 10 years in the corporate world. I have worked with marketing, CRM. I have always been a straight A, overachiever, student, perfectionist. And the world has rewarded that behavior for most of my life, as it does. And I kept pursuing that, thinking that was the way to go, until Act One happened in my life about 7 years ago. And I had my first episode of burnout, which is when you have an emotional and physical collapse. I didn't know what was going on at the time because in Brazil, there's little to no awareness on the subject. So I thought I was having an existential crisis, which was also part of the deal. And I moved to the Netherlands, where I met you and some amazing people. And I thought, okay, I'm living in a first world country with a way better work-life balance and a lot of things are better. And I learned a lot about myself in the whole process. So I thought, you know what, I'll give it another try. And I went to do pretty much exactly the same thing I was doing in Brazil, which was consulting for big, large, enormous organizations. Full-time, and I burned out even worse here. And then I understood what was happening here and what happened prior to that, because I didn't address it, I didn't treat it, I didn't understand what was going on. So what happened was I didn't actually recover from the first burnout, and then I got another one. And that took me a few years to actually start working again. And I realized that I had to rethink my whole relationship with work and with myself. And that's what I've been doing for the last 4 years. I wrote a book called My Morning Pages, where I tell a little bit of my story. I say that I wrote a book, but I actually didn't write it. I did a writing exercise that's called the Morning Pages, where you just like blurt out and write whatever you want every morning. And that was one of my best friends from the recovery. And it's how I made sense of what was happening to me. And then I understood eventually that writing was not only a therapy for me, but was also impacting other people. Because I realized that although we have the stats that say that in Brazil, 1/3 of the workforce has burnout symptoms, that in the Netherlands, 1 out of 6 working workers have burnout, we hardly ever hear anyone saying that they're going through it. So for me, I felt like I was the only one having a hard time and everyone was handling everything very well. But as I started talking about my story and sharing my story with people, I saw it was much more common than I thought. It was just that there's a lot of fear and shame around it. And so I've been dedicating my work on raising awareness on that and also talking about mental health in our relationship with work. And so this is my first book, My Morning Pages. I'm showing it to the video. And I am finishing my second book, which is called One Step a Day, to take away the need of doing the grandiose things and having these expectations, high expectations on things, and just taking it easy one step a day. And living through a pandemic far away from my family. And that's pretty much the presentation I have for today.
I was going to interrupt to ask a questions a couple of times, but actually, your story is so compelling. I just wanted you to, it's almost like another act to the story. But I do want to take it back. There are a few standout moments that really made me think when you were explaining your life just then. And for now, we'll go back to it later, but we'll skip past the corporate world and we'll skip past all of the stuff that you were doing before you realized that you had burnout. I want to get to the point where you came over to the Netherlands, and at that point, as you say, you were still experiencing burnout, but you didn't realize you were experiencing burnout. So when you had your second episode, and you said at that point you realized what it was, you realized it was burnout, and you realized that you'd had burnout previously, and actually it was one continuous burnout. What was it about being in the Netherlands that helped you to be able to realize that you had burnout? Why was it different here to when you were in the UK? UK, when you were in Brazil.
It was in the UK. Also, I love my country. I also absolutely love your country as well. But there were a few things. So first of all, my my mother-in-law had a burnout. So I had a close family experience where it's in Brazil, we barely had discussions in my family before I had the burnout. We barely had mental health discussions. Now we talk about it all the time. But before that, there was a door that we wouldn't open. And at the company, at the place I was working, it wasn't such a taboo. I'm not saying it was not, but it was a lot less than in Brazil. It's in the language of people here. It seems to me that people understand as a word and as a term and what happens. When I went to a coach that she's called Stella, and then I don't remember her last name, but she is a Dutch coach that helps expats who moved here. And before I collapsed, I went to her because I thought I was in a crisis again, which is also part of the problem. So I went to her and I explained to her how I was feeling, that I wanted to go to another place and I wanted to change careers, but I was really lost and I couldn't even think about what to do in terms of work. I couldn't think about work. And then she said, you know, I had a burnout and it was, you know, I can see myself in your story. So have you looked into that? And I had a few weeks after that, I had a panic attack and I had an anxiety crisis. And then the doctors who were like treating me, they said, you have a burnout and you have PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. So that meant that the trauma from my previous burnout, because during my burnout, I had a trauma, a work-related trauma, and that was showing up here. So there was a little bit of family and other professionals and the healthcare using that word that I had seen that word in Brazil once when I was working at around 9 p.m. at the office, and a project manager shared, we were Red Bull buddies. We would start drinking Red Bull around 7 and drink like 2 or 3 Red Bulls a night to keep working. He sent me via Skype, he sent me a link on, are you burned out? And then it was explaining what a burnout was. And that was 7 years ago. And we checked all of the symptoms and we high-fived, because that was a very good sign that we were very dedicated to the company. So that's how I saw burnout in Brazil. And then here I understood, oh, it is an illness. It is, it is a condition and it is a syndrome that carries out things that are not necessarily worth of a high five.
Well, I imagine that some people would say it's still worth a high five, as you say, culture in certain lands would maybe suggest. And we see it all the time. We see it on social media. We see the life that people like to tell everyone that they live, which is all about the success of money, the success of being the head of a big company or the COO or whatever it is. I say success in quotation marks. It's a perceived success. And I'm not saying that you can't be successful with lots of money and you can't be successful by getting these titles, and they are good things to aspire to. However, when you aspire to them at the cost of your personal life and your health, I imagine that suddenly it doesn't feel quite so good. When you realized, I'm not sure if there was a moment, you didn't say there was a specific moment, but when you had your second burnout and you realized that it was actually a burnout and you had the understanding of what you were actually going through at that time, which you hadn't before, how did that feel, that realization?
Terrible, like a punch on my face. And it is the hardest part, because what comes after is difficult, it's long and it's painful. But the first hit, when you finally are confronted with a diagnosis or the realization of that, is really, really heavy, because it shows, it blows in your face that you really went too far. you become aware that the way you thought things worked doesn't work for you. And you can't do everything all the time for everybody. So there's a lot of realizations and epiphanies that happen that follow that, but they're all painful. They're all about how wrong you are about everything. So you start feeling like, can I curse?
Yeah.
Start feeling like shit.
Yeah.
Like the worst person ever. Like, how couldn't I do this? And there's a lot of feelings that it's very confusing, disorienting, because then you think, okay, but that's what everyone is doing. Why can't I do that? And it's a question that I still ask myself every now and then, because I think to myself, why can't I just numb myself?
So what is the basis of that question, do you think? What is it that's making you ask about everyone else rather than looking at yourself? What do you think is making you ask those questions?
It's the it's one of the enemies of presence, which is comparing. And it is looking at other people's lives, and I'm doing air quotes here, that seem that they, quote unquote, have it together with a regular job, a steady pay, and that are using their intellectual capacity to something that may be contributing to a good world, but they have their you know, they pay their bills, they have colleagues, they have like work life that is good enough for them. And I felt really awkward and terrible and weak. I felt very weak. You know, why can't I endure a 40 or 50 hour a week work shift in an office with people that are saying things that are not great? You know, why can't I endure the abuses that everyone endures? And that's the shit show of it, that you start thinking that you're the problem. You know, and then I realized, and a lot of my work is helping people realizing that they're not the problem. Like, we're sensitive to the kind of abuse and the kind of, you know, glorification of busyness and of overwork and using burnout as a badge. Those are the wrong things. Us not being able to put up with that is not a wrong thing. It's not a bad thing. It just means that we are, you know, normal, decent people that, you know, maybe are not made for that.
It's interesting because you mentioned there the word weak, which I think is something that, not just with burnout, but a lot of different, again, I will state I'm not an expert on this. This is just my opinion and me pondering. But sometimes it seems that a lot of different mental health challenges come through that idea of people feeling like they are weak or they're a failure for some reason, that they're not good enough. Often those thoughts and feelings seem to come from very different places. So when you talk about burnout, you talk about the idea of everything was 100 miles an hour, basically. 160 kilometers an hour. and because of that, you wanted to just keep going, no matter what happened, no matter... and you mentioned abuse earlier, which I will come back to. But no matter what abuse you were getting within an office or elsewhere, no matter how you were feeling, you needed to push forward because you needed to achieve your goals and also the goals of the company. And then when that was impossible, that's what made you feel like you were failing in some way. I feel like with other forms of mental health challenges, people sometimes feel like they're failing their family because they're not providing for them. And it's not about overachieving, it's about they feel like they're underachieving. People feel like they are the black sheep of a family. They're the ones who always get things wrong. people feel like they're the ones who deserve to be ignored. And actually, they feel like they are ignored quite a lot of the time. There's all of these different symptoms, I guess, of mental health. But often they seem to come to an almost similar conclusion of that feeling of being weak or feeling of failure. How do you, I'm not asking you to compare because that would be completely against what we're talking about, but how do you feel that works or that links? So the idea of burnout to other mental health challenges and I guess what we can try as a society to do about them.
So the reason why I started investing my time and energy in studying and writing about burnout, and also a very important disclaimer is that I'm not a healthcare professional. I'm a writer who writes about my experience and tries to translate some of research and some of the knowledge that has been acquired about the syndrome. And one of the reasons why I decided to pursue that avenue is that it's not simply a matter of the individual. And because I felt weak and ashamed, I understand that this is something that happens to a lot of people. And I really want to tell people, it's not your fault. It's not a sign of weakness from you. And what I've been learning recently, more and more, is that this concept, this idea, expands to the whole mental health landscape, because a lot of our suffering has to do with feeling inadequate and feeling insufficient. But all of that has to do with a world that has been put there and a system and, economic, political, whatever, ideological system that is out there. And people who do not conform into that, it's too painful to not be the normal, quote unquote. And when we realize that some things are not proper or unethical, or that we don't have access to a good, work-life balance, a decent work-life balance, considering all the wealth that the world has and all the wealth that we all create, we shouldn't be working this much. Like it's not right. It's not the right thing that we are overworking, pursuing so much wealth when there is already so much wealth. It's just, there's just too much inequality.
I understand that point, and I'm not sure if we would be going off on too much of a tangent to go into the discussions about, capitalism, etc. But there are problems, whether or not you're on the side of capitalism or you're against capitalism, etc. That's not the point. The point is that individuals being expected to live up to the expectations of everybody else, both internally, but also often those internal feelings are coming from outside environments and then being absorbed. That's often what causes people to feel the feelings you were talking about, the feelings of weakness, the feelings of not being good enough. When I asked the question earlier about how you felt about the diagnosis, about actually when it hit you, your reply, completely understandable reply, was regarding the almost the inner destruction and the feelings that you had of, hang on a minute, why aren't I good enough? The more you looked into it and the more you realized just how many people had the same challenges, had the same issues, just how many people had experienced burnout, and those are only the ones who are willing to admit it. Did that change your perspective on it at all, or did it make it feel even worse?
A little bit. Well, it shifted my anger from inward to outward.
Okay.
Instead of being angry at myself, I became angry at the world for doing that to us.
Yeah.
But it is a shared responsibility. When we think about our mental system or equipment, we have a part of us that is pure according to psychoanalysis, like it's pure desire, and just like we just want to fulfill what we want and what we desire. And then there's another part that is conforming to the world and the systems and the expectations of others. And what happens is when these two parts of us are they're walking into opposite directions, the central part, which is like what we do normally in our day-to-day lives, it becomes rotten and broken, because we cannot, you know, we can't compete trying to be a singer or a writer and then the world telling, no, you need to be a marketing consultant. And it's so important that we're able to understand that between what we want to be and what the world expects of us, we need to find this balance that is not, you know, running around naked in the street, although if you want to do that and it's legal where you live, go for it. But also not sit in a cubicle just because someone told you so. Mm-hmm. You need to find this balance. And as I hear,
sorry to interrupt, that actually leads me to a slightly different topic. It's all along the same lines, but some people, when I've read about this before, talk about burnout being a privilege of the rich, or a privilege of people who can say, well, yes, I'm going through all these challenges and then I burnt out, so I left my job and, you know, and now I'm not doing it anymore, etc. And it's kind of understandable that they ask that question, if I'm honest, because, you know, sometimes if you work for minimum wage somewhere and you feel like the only other job you can get would be just as exhausting you know, you can't stop and only work a few hours a week, or you can't stop and reduce your hours to 30 a week, etc. They might say, well, you call this burnout, I just call this coping with life. They might say something along those lines. I would make this clear, these aren't my words, by the way. This is just stuff that I've read. But what are your thoughts on that? Because you were talking kind of around that area just then, of the idea that you don't have to go and work in a cubicle in an office. But what if some people feel like, well, actually, I do have to go and work in a cubicle in an office, or otherwise I can't feed my kids? Before Carol answers that question, a reminder that you're currently listening to episode 12 of the Storytelling with Puck podcast. Our guest today is the incredible Carol Miltersteiner. We've been talking about burnout and touching on other mental health challenges too. We will continue to do so before the end of the show. Please get support when you need it. There is help out there, and we will link to foundations such as Mind in the show notes. In the meantime, listen to more of Carol's insightful answers, more of her stories, and of course, a story by Puck Creations to finish the podcast. We'll now head back to Carol, who is about to answer the question around whether or not burnout is something that only rich people are privileged enough to be able to feel.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting point, because I recorded a video in Portuguese with the myths of burnout. And one of them is that burnout is something that only hits rich people. And I've been talking, and I've been creating most of my content in the last year and a half. I have been creating most of my content in Portuguese and talking to the Brazilian community, because I saw that other countries, other markets are kind of covered in that. And in Brazil, people have no idea what is happening. So I need to address a little bit more there. And I have a group that it's a support group that meets once a month, that I do it for free. It's confidential. And from what I see from the stories of people who follow me, who bought my book, and, you know, who I talk to in the support group, you have police officers, you have teachers, you have secretaries, you have, you know, you have all sorts of people that are not privileged. And also it's important for me because I have a very decent background, financially speaking. And I always put that very clearly, that I know that I'm a privileged person. As a Latin American living in the Netherlands, the privilege is not that much. But going back to Brazil, in Brazil, I'm a white person. and that I had a higher education. I didn't have to pay for it. I didn't have to work while I was in the university. I chose to work, but I didn't have to. So that allowed me to a lot of choices. Mm-hmm. And one of the things behind burnout is that this desire that you have, the desire you have is proportional to how much you know that is out there in the world. So if you don't even know that you could do something else because you're from a different reality, it is more difficult to even grasp and to even desire something different. But then as I start seeing these people that have stories that are so similar than my story, because I thought, okay, I was working corporate, I had a high end job, and like, it's not going to connect with anyone. But then there's so many different stories and realities of people that we just relate to this thing of, you know, something in us intuitively is saying, this is not, it's not supposed to be like this. And that's what creates, and burnout obviously is painful, it's difficult, but it is a way out. You know, it is not the easiest and it's not the best. if you could go get out without getting sick and without being unable to work for years, I would recommend so. But when you are already in that, it is a way out that gives you perspective in a lot of aspects of life. And there's research showing that the burnout incidence is higher the more unequal is the country. So if you just compare Brazil to the Netherlands, for instance, the appearance of burnout in Brazil, the occurrence is twice as much as in the Netherlands. And one of the reasons is the inequality. And the majority of the people who are burning out in Brazil are not CEOs, or they are also, but they also afford better mental health assistance, and they afford good doctors, they afford medication. So maybe they can expand their health a little bit to who knows until when. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, the people who have less access, they only get to see a psychiatrist, for instance, when they are already collapsed, because the health system is not that accessible.
Doesn't provide for them. So based on that, thank you, by the way, for that answer, because I think it does explain quite clearly that the idea that burnout is, it doesn't matter who you are, you can experience it. But the next challenge might be, as you mentioned, CEOs have enough money to be able to pay for the healthcare, to be able to pay for the support to stop burnout from happening. They also have enough money to step back and to stop working. And I know it's not your job to solve the world's problem, so I'm not expecting you to. But just as an idea, what could people who are experiencing burnout and who are maybe coming to the realization that they're experiencing burnout, but don't have the money or the opportunities to do what a CEO can do, what techniques could they use to at least help them? Even if they can't, I mean, I don't think it's possible to get rid of burnout, if that makes sense. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, I'm not sure. But even if they can't, you know, completely stop it, and even if it means they're trying to balance things, but what can someone do to reduce stress levels, reduce the burden on them?
Yeah, so there are a few things there. I read, someone posted on LinkedIn something comparing, using a metaphor of a glass of water to burnout, that when your glass is really full and starts, you know, leaking the water, then you're burned out. And in the article, they were saying, like, you need to try to find ways of making your glass bigger. And then I commented, that's very nice that you're talking about burnout. Thank you. However, it's not about, let's change the, it's not about making the glass bigger. We have limits. Our body has limits. But I do understand that using the metaphor, sometimes our stress coping mechanisms for several reasons, for because of our genes or because of something that has happened in our childhood. Our stress coping mechanisms can be weak. So you can start with the cup and then it's not that much. Mm-hmm. So you can expand from a cup to a glass, for instance, doing therapy, doing meditation, doing breathing exercises, finding out things that will help you recover from the stress. There's one exercise that's really easy, simple. That is, you list all of the sources of your stress. Mm-hmm. Which is a very fun exercise. I would by sources, I mean tasks, responsibilities, people that are sources of stress for us. I know I have for me. And
I'm very sorry about that, Carol. I tried
Wednesday.
To.
Oh, terrible. And then you make another list of sources of stress recovering. And they can be anything. They can be walking your dog, petting your cat, seeing someone from your family in a video call or in person if your administration has allowed you to do that. And, you know, gardening, cooking, drawing, writing, meditating, putting your feet on the grass. There's a lot of different ways. Taking a hot bath. I don't have a bath. I wish I had. One day, maybe I'll do that. And, you know, having a bath salts, how do you call that? Yeah. I have a feeling that every time that I do that I draw myself a bath, which happens twice a year when I can afford to go to a hotel for one night and do that. But still, it's a good investment. It's a very good investment. I have a feeling that all the anxiety that I have been carrying and all of the stress goes in the water and I leave. It's almost like I'm floating. It's unbelievable. So we all have different ways of recovering from this stress. So this would be on the increasing the glass a little bit, but also being mindful of the amount of water you can fit in your glass.
Mm. So if possible, the idea, if we go to the glass metaphor, the idea is to pour out some of the water and yes. therefore not do quite as much, maybe. And again, there are lots of circumstances which may mean that this isn't possible. But if it's possible, reduce the amount of work that you're doing. If it's possible, something like stop the extracurricular activities that you're doing, maybe that the kids are doing, or maybe that you're doing, going out on the evenings out, burning the candle at both ends. If you can, you know, you want to live and you want to have fun, but take it back a little, pour a little bit of water out. But then if there comes a point where actually the water's at a level that is the only way place it can be to maintain your life and to be able to actually have a life at all, then the other techniques that you mentioned really come into play as well. So the techniques of, you didn't mention this one, I don't think, but even just the simple breathing exercises, kind of meditation type exercises that really help. I mentioned that one because I meditate a lot and I love it. But as you say, going for walks, taking a bath, all of that kind of stuff, that's where you are giving yourself a slightly bigger cup or giving yourself or upgrading to a glass. I'm not sure if it's an upgrade from a cup to a glass, but do you know what I mean? Upsizing to a glass. Yeah. So there's almost two strategies that play in one at once. And you do whatever you can with both and those things might help. Again, I know that some people might not be able to necessarily afford this, but what are your feelings on talking to people, especially, both professional and non-professional people? What are your feelings around it?
It is very important, very necessary. I used to say until very recently, I used to say that everybody needs therapy, but I also understand that there is an increasing mindset that everyone is mentally ill. And then we could just go to another episode and have a whole discussion of that. It's a spectrum, you know, it's also like burnout is a spectrum. There's a spectrum of, you know, you're not conforming to, it is actually hurting your life and depriving you of productivity or relationships or whatever. And then there's actually an illness. So maybe not everyone needs a therapist, but a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. And maybe not everyone can afford a therapist, but a lot of people can. And there's a lot of other options. Universities, the people who study, they offer a very cheap or free assistance. There are support groups. And there is this, your support network, which is your family, your friends. And you'd be surprised, because I was not the kind of person that would talk to other people about my problems. I always thought that my job was to bring good news to people. So I can only bring good news to my parents. I can only bring good news to my friends. And if I go for a bad time, I will only call them after I've solved it to tell them that, you know, remember last week that I didn't show up at all? I was actually depressed and I was having a panic attack, but I'm good now. With time, I started to learn that I don't have to wait, and that the opening up is something that we wait, sometimes wait for the other person to start that. Mm-hmm. And because what I do now, I like burnout is within the first three sentences whenever I introduce myself to someone. And that is weird, but it also helps me to get to a deeper conversation. And since I started opening up to pretty much the world with the book and everything that I write about, people tell me their stories as well. So it's a two-way street where if you feel like your relationships are shallow and you can only do small talk, sometimes you just need to give it a try and tell someone, like, you know what, can you talk? You know, it's been difficult. And this period of time, especially, it's been extremely difficult for all of us. So shall we cut the small talk and actually say that we're all very afraid and, you know, and lonely and feeling scared, and that when we have our own business, it's terrifying and we are not sure of where we're going, and people are trying to sell us an illusion that there is a straight path to success, but that thing does not exist. Can we talk about that? And that is very, very important. And I see mental health as a big salad. And you will understand why in a minute.
Okay.
So you have the main ingredients of a salad. So say it's lettuce or rucola, whatever are the greens of your salad. They're the main things. So if you are someone who has an illness or a disorder, you will need therapy. You will need medication. These are the basics. You cannot have a salad without the greens. You're just something else. You can call it a salad, but it's not exactly. But you're not going to eat a salad. You're not going to eat, you know, pure raw lettuce. That's not a salad at all. So you also need to add like some tomatoes, some other ingredients. And that's where other techniques will help, like meditation, walking, exercising is good for your mental health. So you keep adding some ingredients, and then you have the spices that what makes it palatable. So dancing, singing, being weird, painting, having a hobby, having fun, you know, because why would you even want to, you know, wake up day after day if you're not having joy in your life? It doesn't matter how much medication you're taking and how much therapy you're going to, if you're just numb half of the time. So you need to add a little bit of the spice, and then you have the, how do you call that? The croutons, which is, you know, an added that can help or not, which are like the alternative therapies, things that may help, may not. We don't know yet for sure. Some people believe in croutons, some people don't. and you know, support network, pets. There's studies that add pets as main support network, and that are defending that the health insurance should also reimburse costs of a pet if someone has a chronic condition, because they have with establishing a routine, they help with, you know, love and affection. They help in a lot of ways, mentally and physically. And so you need to add like a lot of ingredients. And it's not just about going to therapy. And this is one thing that I've learned myself as well. Like, it's not about just going to therapy or just taking a pill and everything will go away, or just opening up to someone. Is doing everything is thinking about your life, is thinking about your purpose, and, you know, finding the joy in every day.
That makes a lot of sense. And so, as you say, it's there's kind of the stuff that trying to help your mental health, you're just not going to be able to do it unless you have, especially if you've got a serious condition, unless you have, as you explained in the salad, the leaves, unless you have the proper support. But then that by itself will only get you so far.
Yeah.
Actually, lifestyle changes are needed to really, really bring you out and to take you beyond just being okay to being good, to being happy, to being at least contented. And okay, that makes a lot of sense. I would just add as well, and we'll make sure we put this in the show notes afterwards, there are professionals that you can talk to, at least in the UK. I'm going to look and see if there are some in the Netherlands, and you can help to see if there are more in Brazil too, that are free. If you're really desperate, especially if you're really desperate, that you can just call them up, talk to them, tell them what's going on, and they will be your friend on the phone. So if you feel like there isn't anyone else you can talk to, there's always these people that can help you. I'll make sure that I put that stuff on the show notes for you as well. I'm not going to make this any lighter. Apologies. The next question I'm going to ask is something that stood out to me when you were talking earlier. I think it was in one of your free acts, but even if it wasn't, it was definitely in the introduction, was some of the abuse that was happening in the workplace when you were still in your corporate world, when you were in Brazil. Can you explain, only if you're comfortable doing this, by the way, to our listeners, a little bit more about what that abuse was, what you meant by abuse?
So there are different forms of harassment. There is verbal harassment, there's sexual harassment, there's physical aggression and abuse. And naming those things properly and understanding what is an abusive behavior is extremely important. And anything that people tell you that will challenge your own perception of yourself, of the reality in a detrimental way, that will make you think, am I smart at all? Am I stupid? Am I crazy? Am I very incompetent? And I'm lucky that they are hiring me. Is that it? Is no one else ever gonna hire me if they fire me from the job, and then I'm gonna die hungry and alone? These sort of manipulations that individuals and companies, and by companies I mean the individuals that are in the companies, managers, people that hold power over you, they will try to make you believe that you're weak, that you're dumb, that you're incompetent, that you're lazy. And they will do that because they think, some people will do that because they think that if you feel threatened, you will work better. Mm-hmm. And you will give them more of your competence and your ability. But that's clearly not the way to go. It is a form of management that we already know that doesn't work, but not everyone got the memo, and there's still people doing shit to other people to this day. So some of the examples, to put it in a more tangible way, when a CEO of a company yells from his room, "Who the fuck did this shit?" You are threatening everyone in the office, because everyone now thinks the CEO hates me, I've done something stupid, I'm gonna get fired, and I'm gonna make this company go bankrupt.
What would you say to people who would respond to that by saying, but that's, you know, part and parcel of working in an office? If you want to be successful, then sometimes you have to take that criticism. If you want to be successful, then you need to just accept that sometimes you're going to do things wrong and that your boss isn't going to be happy with you, and then you move on and you do better for them and you actually do make your work better, and therefore you get to the top of a company and you get to have all of the millions and all of that kind of stuff. And they say, they might say, so how is that abuse? How is that? It's not abuse. It's motivation. It's a different form of motivation. It's how people used to motivate in the industrial era. So why is it good enough for people then and it's not good enough for you now? There will be a lot of people, I'm sure, who will have that kind of reaction to what you're saying. What would you say to those people who rebutted your point with it's not abuse, it's just work?
Don't be a snowflake. I know. Some things first, the yelling, the command and control type of management in a company or in a relationship, it leads to stress. And when we're stressed, we have three answers. We have three responses: fight, flight, or freeze. Some people fight back. So they will yell back at you and they will work their asses off to prove that you're wrong. Some people will procrastinate work as much as possible because they don't want to disappoint you. They will run away from the job. They'll run away from the responsibility. And some people will freeze, which is they will be an inept to do anything, to respond to work or anything. The misunderstanding is that when you do that to someone, when you provoke someone in a violent, aggressive way, is that you would get that person to go to the fight mode. Mm-hmm. But that's just one of three responses. And even if they're in fight mode, they are not in their clearest mind. And it could be useful to have people in a fight mode when you're just adjusting, tools in a factory. If you're doing like a physical labor that you don't need to think of the consequences, you need to repeat the same action every day. I don't think that's the way to go. But if it worked 100 years ago, sure, good for you. This person was probably taking it out at home with someone else because that's what we do. Brené Brown says that a pain that is not felt is forwarded over to another person. So we just created this chain effect of, you know, someone is inflicting you pain, I'm going to inflict pain to someone else and I won't have to deal with it. So don't. The other thing is we are not, you know, most of us are not doing so much physical labor as we're doing mental labor. So we need to be well mentally in order to work well. We're knowledge workers, most of us now, that we need to access our knowledge, our creativity, our problem solving. We cannot access problem solving, logic, and creativity if we're feeling threatened. And that's the thing that I don't understand how people don't get it yet. But I practice compassion and I try to think, okay, I've been reading a lot of this every day for the last 4 years. So of course I would know that not everyone is obliged to know all of it because I also am ignorant to a lot of other things. It doesn't work. If you don't feel compelled to not be aggressive towards someone because it is not the right thing to do, you should be compelled to not be aggressive because it's counterproductive. It's not sustainable. I have one quick story. Not sure it's going to be quick. About a year ago, I took a part-time job at a company in the city I'm living here in Tilburg. And I had to perform a very manual labor that was very, I had to repeat the same task. So I had like 5 tasks. I had to organize some files and then put them in a shelf and then from the shelf to the box, from the box to a bag and the bag and put the bag somewhere else. I had like 10 different things that I had to take care of. It was easy in the beginning. I thought it was almost a meditation because I didn't have to think about anything. I just had to do and do and do and do. I had to process a few products on that on that facility, and my shift was 4 hours. The person who was supervising me was yelling at me for the 4 hours, saying that I was very slow. I'm not fluent in Dutch. And so I would try to respond to her, and we only spoke in Dutch for the 4 hours, which was an added stress to me, but I was trying, so I kept going. Every time that I would say something in Dutch, she would reply to me looking, "What language are you trying to speak? Because I don't understand anything you say." If I would make a mistake, she would just like go at me. There was a Dutch girl sitting beside me that made worse mistakes, and she didn't have to hear anything. So it was one abuse accumulating to the other and the other and the other and the other. Those were the most stressful 4 hours that I had in years. I came back home. I almost had a panic attack the next day, and I gave up on like looking for traditional jobs forever. But I realized that I managed to process, I think, 600 of those products in 4 hours. And according to my calculations, my error margin was like 5%. And I realized, oh my God, like her pressure made me work so much more and deliver so much more than I would expect myself. Because if you would ask me, I would say I can process like 50 because it's the first time I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. But she made me go so much further than I thought. And then I actually, for a second, I was tricked into thinking, you know, it's not that bad. But the thing is, I did 600 in 4 hours, but I never came back.
So they had to train somebody else up. They had to get somebody else to do 600 in 4 hours who potentially left, but actually they had a gap of having no worker. So by the time they got somebody else in, you could have learned and you could have been doing 600 a day regularly. So as you say, it didn't, to bring this to a more general business idea, and a marketing idea too, and sales, because that's where we specialize. It's often that fight between short-term and medium/long-term gains for a company. Lots of businesses rush to try and get something done, and so they cut corners. They don't have the foundations in place. They don't have everything they need to market themselves properly. There's no strategy in place. They don't understand who they are. They will go and they will sell by focusing purely on the features of a product rather than on what the benefits of that product are, and also why people should buy from them as a company. And I think the illusion of success, because it works in the short term. Quite often people earn money and they get quick wins, and that illusion of success means that they don't try some of the medium to longer term strategies. But the problem is, by the time they realize that it's going to go wrong because they lose customers, they have to give refunds back, the company goes bust. Or at the very least, they have to get rid of staff and start all over again. So I think your story is, as much as, yes, it's an example of bad management and abuse, it's also a metaphor for business, I believe, and how to maybe adjust your thinking a little bit, yeah, so that you're thinking further ahead rather than just thinking about the here and now. And that's not easy to do, because the here and now is where we earn our money. And especially if you're an early business starting out, you have bills to pay. But if you can think ahead, then and you're able financially to take some of the hits in the short term, it's often worthwhile for the long term.
Yeah. And it comes also to one thing that we were discussing the other day about relationship with clients. Mm-hmm. Because it's the kind of thing that you need to set the expectations early on, because otherwise you might deliver one project and that's going to be stressful as hell because you haven't done your scoping correctly or you haven't done your briefing. You just said yes to everything they wanted. So you might finish that and you might deliver that, but maybe they will never come back to you. And maybe you don't want to work with them anymore. And it's this perspective that I didn't have when I had my first burnout, because I was going to work and I wasn't thinking, can I do this for another 40 years? Because obviously no. And it's one thing that I keep thinking, you know, the Groundhog Day, the movie.
Yeah.
Like, if I would have to repeat this day over and over again, would I be happy with it? And in the last few years, the answer is yes, most of the times. Back then it was hell no. I don't know if I can take 6 months more of this, and just looking forward to one miracle that would change everything. But you really need to be aware of that. If the way that you're working is really sustainable. And I mean, sometimes you will have a month that is very rushed, or like you have one project, and it's not about never opening an exception or never, you know, aiming high or something like that. It's about not making that your routine and your rule. Because we are limited. Our mental and physical equipment are limited, and we often forget about that.
It's a great point. We are coming towards the end of our time on the podcast, sadly, because I could and often do away from the recording sessions talk to you forever. But for the listeners, they probably need to go and have some food. So we should let them be free. But before we do, you mentioned at the beginning that you are writing a lot, and you have written your first book. So if people want to find this, or if they want to talk to you about burnout, or if they just want to talk to you about Brazil or the Netherlands, or I don't know, food, whatever, yeah. How can they find you?
So my website is carolmuters.com/EN as in English, or you can just go to carolmuters.com and there is an icon there to move to English. The majority of my content is in Portuguese. So if you want to train your Portuguese, you can do that. You can also find me on LinkedIn. It's also Carol Muters. It's LinkedIn / there's always something after the slash of LinkedIn.
I don't know. / IN.
And yeah. Then Carol Muters. And then you can find my profile. I post there is the place that I post more regularly in English. I have Instagram. My Instagram in Portuguese is at Carol Muters. In English, it is at Carol Muters Writer in the end. Last year I have organized the first Global Awareness Week on Burnout. It was in right after the Black Friday, which was very symbolic to me because I almost had, I had a breakdown right after Black Friday, because at e-commerce, we work our asses off on the Black Friday. So I wanted to do that. And we had over 300 attendees. It was online, it was free. And we had a lot of content in Portuguese, but we also brought researchers and writers and people who have been living or studying the subject from different countries. We had South Africa, Germany, United States, Switzerland, I think.
Wow.
I want to say. And then this year, we're also going to have, I want to make it an yearly thing, 1 week dedicated to bringing the different facets that will, you know, impact on our mental health at work, the workplace itself, the health aspect, the financial, the society and cultural aspect to it. So if you want to learn more, it's burnoutawarenessweek.org. Then you can watch all the videos there. I do the streamings via YouTube, so they're all on my YouTube channel as well. And if you go to my website, you can find links to everything else, and you can feel free to text me. My book is available on Amazon and most of the places, any place where digital books are sold, my book is available. And the print, the paperback version is available on Amazon, and it ships to anywhere in the world. So you can go there and look for my name, and the name of the book is My Morning Pages.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I'm sure we'll have some people scurrying quickly to look at the show notes and click on some of those links to find you, or as you say, go into your website and finding everything off there. We will, in a second, finish the podcast the way that we always finish the Storytelling with Puck podcast, Puck Creation Story. But just before we do, I want to say a heartfelt thank you so much. I know that I sometimes ask some challenging questions, but the way you answer them, I think, will be incredibly useful for all of our listeners. So thank you so much for sharing your time with our listeners.
Thank you. I'm a fan of yours, of Cyan and of Puck Creations for a long time. And I really admire the work. I loved being part of the Storytelling Week. It's the second time I think I've been part of it. I love it. I think it's really inspiring and necessary that we can connect to others via storytelling. The podcast is great. I've been listening to all of the episodes. And it's been an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
The rest of your day, Cal.
Bye.
It's not weak to feel weak, even when you're at the peak of physical fitness. Your mind just bears witness. It's not a mark on your mark if you feel in the dark. When the world sees your light, it seems everything is right. It's not a pin on your pins, popping when you can't win, when your legs so strong collapse because something's wrong. It's okay not to be okay. It's the way not to know the way. It's not a sign that you missed the sign. It's top of mind, not loss of mind. So be aware there's someone there to help you when you're feeling scared. You're strong inside. You can fight. But it's okay not to be all right. You've just been listening to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We'll be back very soon, so make sure you subscribe and catch up on any of the episodes you've missed.